outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, a new year is upon us, Kyle, and a new season of the God Journey, season number 23.
Season number 23. What does that mean going into 2026?
Doesn't mean a thing to me. Just another year of doing it.
Does this excite you? Like, are you, obviously we're still doing it so that you still find value in it. But I mean, 23 seasons, we went by our 1,000th episode in 2025. Any ideas for the new year on what the God Journey might explore?
You know, I don't do that kind of thing.
No, that's why I love asking you.
I just know I missed you last week when we didn't have a conversation. I missed being with you. And my sheet of possible things to talk about keeps growing and growing. So.
I agree.
How many of these we'll get to? I don't know. I'm most excited this year about getting Just Love out into the world. So
yes.
Fastly trying to pull that all together and get it to the copy editor, hopefully next week. And then we'll see how it goes from there.
Wow. Okay.
I got it out to a few advanced readers and getting really good feedback on the books.
So. I am almost done with it and cannot wait to send you my notes. It has been phenomenal.
Oh, wow. See, this is rude for those that I can't
see. I know. I know our listeners are very annoyed at us, but it is so good. So good.
Someday we'll talk about it on the podcast. Maybe get Toby to join us again this time.
That would be awesome.
That would be fun. Good Christmas.
Yeah, it was good Christmas. We navigated a little bit of sickness, but overall just got a lot of time with friends and family and cousins. And so that was always a great time. Got to see some more distant family that I don't get to see a whole lot. So that was really encouraging. And good. So, yeah, it was a very good time. How about you?
Yeah, my son came in from Denver. So he and his wife split directions. She went home to Canada. He came this way because she's got a dear old friend who's visiting from Australia. She hasn't seen in 20 years. So she went up to have more girl time. He came out here to watch football, hang out with us, and had
nice
Christmas day over at my daughter's. And so it's a great time.
That's awesome. I didn't realize that she was from Canada. I didn't know that.
She's from Winnipeg, Canada. So
okay. Okay.
She went home to the cold weather.
Yeah, I was going to say that. I imagine that the weather that Andy was experiencing was a little bit nicer than what she was getting into.
Yeah, at least our precipitation was not solid. It was liquid form. So, yeah, much preferable. But he sits here and looks over and says, you know, it's 75 in Denver today, and it was 64 here or something. So, you should all come to Denver and celebrate Christmas.
I'm not going to lie. We had amazing weather in Wyoming as well. I mean, it was in the 60s and 70s, even had one day that was in the low 80s. So it was very, very nice, very bizarre for this area in regards to weather.
Yeah, I bet it was. That's kind of a great way to go. But for us, a little cooler, a little wet, but we did good.
So best thing that you heard starting out the new year?
Well, since the new year hadn't started for me yet, I don't even know if I have one, to be honest.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've got a lot of provocative statements here. Yep, nope, can't do that. Can't do that. How about you?
Mine actually came from a conversation that I had with my cousin. He and I got to spend some time together, and we were talking a lot about what does rest look like, and especially for people that do a lot of the heady. I was talking about some of the curriculum development that I've been doing, a bunch of reading and stuff, and then was telling him how excited I am because I have a project four-wheeler that I'm working on. I'm completely tearing it down and rebuilding it. And he laughed and he's like, yeah, I've got the perfect quote for you. And he sent it to me and it says, a person who works with their mind must rest with their hands. And that was so appropriate for me. That like when I'm doing a lot of my thinking and processing and teaching and coaching and all those elements, the way that I rest is with projects, physical projects that I can do with my hands.
Wow. Well, good for you. I can't think of a physical project I've been on in a long time. I guess I found rest in a good book.
Yeah, that's fair. Okay.
But not with my hands necessarily.
So what about you? Did you find the best thing?
I've got some things to do, but I'm afraid they'd take us a different direction.
Okay.
I guess this one would probably be fitting coming into the new year. This one someone quoted to me a couple of weeks ago, and it's from the Lord of the Rings movie. It says, "The world has changed. I feel it in the earth. I feel it in the water. I smell it in the air. Much that once was is lost, for none now live who remember it."
Yeah, that sounds about right for the times and the age that we're living in.
Yeah, I think about some of the things that were just normal when I was a kid and growing up as a young parent of kids and all that. Things have changed so drastically over the last 30, 40 years. And I'm sure everybody in there my age says that about the past. But I do feel like something has changed in the earth. That's what spawned its time. And yeah, I'm still looking forward to seeing how that finds its way in the world.
Oh, man. And I think it's so appropriate. I got into a lot of conversations over the break along the lines of what people are facing in today's culture. And you laugh because you said that from your generation, you're looking at the changes that you've seen, et cetera. And I can very confidently say that somebody who is turning 40 this year is looking at the drastic changes that we've faced in our culture just in my lifetime. And even just in the last 5 years, it has been on hyperdrive or hyper mode in regards to the changes that we're seeing and the different questions and different things that we're navigating as a society now. It's very, very, very interesting days.
These are interesting days, and hopefully we'll be with you through it as we hang on the God journey here a little bit longer.
Absolutely.
And I'm Wayne Jacobson, by the way.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And welcome to season 23 of the God Journey as we start 2026 together. You almost got me on this theme before I wanted to get there, but you know that book we read, The Secret of Secrets?
Uh-huh.
Remember that book?
I do.
It was something, it's probably not the best thing I heard this week, but it was something that I thought maybe be fun to talk about. One of the lead characters in the book says this toward the end, "Fear makes us selfish." I've never heard it put that way before. But boy, I sit back and go, I think that's true. Fear makes us selfish. The more we fear death specifically, the more we cling to ourselves, our belongings, our safe spaces, to that which is familiar. We exhibit increased nationalism, racism, and religious intolerance. We flout authority, ignore social mores, steal from others to provide for ourselves, and become more materialistic. We even abandon our feelings of environmental responsibility because we sense the planet is a lost cause and we're all doomed anyway.
Mm.
Boy, that's this is Dan Brown's novel. It's not a Christian novel. It's not even necessarily a novel to comment on things in society. But I found that quote from the book to be true, first of all, and incredibly compelling.
It's intriguing because I think especially with COVID, we saw that get amped up to a whole new degree. When we saw people being faced with their mortality, they're in lockdown, this uncertainty of what's going to be coming, watching the way that people attempted to hold on to their comfort, what was familiar, try to grab hold of their piece of the pie as much as they could for as long as they could. Gosh, just seeing that get amped up to a whole new level. It was incredible watching how that impacted culture and society.
And it's interesting to see how science, social science research has shown that when you're afraid of dying, you resort to all these behaviors that are so destructive for the culture at large. It may look like, hey, this is good for me. I'm going to grab this and do that and get my stuff. But if everybody's doing that, the culture takes a nosedive, as we've seen happen in recent years. And then they add this from the book. The most important point in the research, however, shows that those who do not fear death, for whatever reason, tend to exhibit behavior that is more benevolent, accepting of others, cooperative, and caring about the environment. Essentially, this means that if we could all free our minds of the burden of the terror we feel about death, our society would be better. The Czech psychiatrist Stanislav Grof, you know Stanislav Grof?
I know the name, yes.
I don't. Said the elimination of the fear of death transforms the individual's way of being in the world. Now, I don't know how you can read that and not think of Hebrews 2. Where it says that Jesus came in the flesh to take the fear of death away from us, to set those free who'd been in slavery to the fear of death all their lives. To have that now, and social scientists are saying the fear of death is what really screws up society in a major way. And if we didn't fear it for whatever reason, it would be, we would be different in the world. And that's so good. I think that's just a powerful thing.
So I'm intrigued. What is the correlation? I'm going to throw this out there and see where you land with it. What is the correlation between the fear of death and just love?
Oh, I didn't make a correlation there. You're going to make it work.
So I'm putting it out there because I want to throw that out there because I think, especially when we've talked a little bit about just love and we've talked about what does it look like to be a conduit of God's justice and his love in the world, in contrast to everything that we just talked about in regards to how fear impacts the way that we live in the world, how would you see the transformative love of Christ moving someone into a different space in regards to the way that they live in comparison to the fear of death? Because I'm intrigued about how many Christ followers still fear death. That they still live in such a way where they fear their mortality. There isn't this hope and aspiration for the future. And so as a result, their lives mirror what we just heard described by social scientists in regards to the impact of fearing death.
Yeah, I was thinking about that a lot this week. How we talk about Jesus came to, Hebrews does, to set us free from those who were in slavery to the fear of death. But what actually Christianity did was it made us fear death even more. Because it gave us this incredible consequence at the end of your life. If you haven't done enough of something or the right something, you have these horrible consequences for eternity. And if you've done the right things, then you might have joy in their life. My 2x2 friends, they talk about, many of them, that no matter how many jumps you jump through, they never had an assurance of salvation. You wouldn't know until you get in the presence of Jesus if you qualified or not. So the very thing that Jesus came to set us free from, we made it worse by threatening people with what could happen to you on the other side of death. So now I'm not only thinking about death itself, but then the consequences of my dying and my endearment to God's ways. And have I done it enough? Have I done it right? All those questions were made worse by, and that's, some would say not pure Christianity, but our distortions of Christianity.
Yeah.
That causes fear to be even more pronounced in our life. And then for us to act, as it says, fear makes us selfish. What a powerful statement. And you can see that with anybody. It doesn't have to be the fear of death. It can be the fear of anything. Once you get fearful, you start, the whole self-protection mechanism kicks in and you do whatever's best for you and the other folks around you, neighbors, friends, family, you know, all that be damned. I've got to take care of myself. And there's something in the amygdala part of the brain that encourages that kind of behavior. Yeah. But to look at that clearly, fear makes us selfish. Mm. And love, I think, love or the lack of fear, which I think fear and love are really opposite. So when you learn love, God's love for me, then that takes away all the fear. And then my love for others allows me to export a more benevolent, generous personality in the world. Not a self-protective, defending my turf, doing whatever I need to do for me at your expense oftentimes. I even think about this when it talks about we steal more from each other, which was one of those things that I think, well, we generally don't steal in the sense of sneak into each other's homes and stealing goods, but we steal attention. We steal people's right to personhood. We steal their individuality. There's lots of things you can steal other than taking a gun and go sticking somebody up for their money.
No, it's very intriguing to me because as I think about this, I think about even just the laments that I hear from people who are operating in a pastoral role, a professional pastoral role. And they talk about how, well, now it's just like the audience wants this performance and they want us to be doing certain things and they need the programming to be a certain level and they do church shopping. So if they're not giving me what I want, then I'm going to go somewhere else. Yep. And I think about that. I think about, okay, how much of that is a product of the culture that we've created in the context of what it means to live a Christ-like lifestyle. Because if we are supposed to be living in this this constant tension of fear about my salvation and what happens if God says, if I don't do exactly X, Y, and Z, then then all of a sudden it's creating this self-focus where, again, talking about Jamie Winship stuff, self-protection, self-promotion. That's where fear drives you. That's where scarcity drives you. And so when you look at these spaces, it's like, man, if you have perfected using your existential salvation fear as a means of motivation, behavior modification, bringing people in alignment with belief systems, then it's not surprising that we're seeing some of the byproducts of that behavior and how that impacts the mind of a human being.
Yeah, especially coming from those who profess Christianity to be some of the most fearful people in our culture.
Yes.
Instead of, what does it mean that Jesus came to set us free from our slavery to the fear of death? Our slavery to fear in general, from everything. If we find our, this is where I think just love comes in, because it starts with, okay, if we got this righteousness word in a better place, so it's not this, Jesus sees me righteous even though I live like a snake. And really learn to live inside his love and watch how that love changes us and how it enables and ennobles people around us. It doesn't take from them. It doesn't compete with them. Religion, particularly when I was embedded in it, it's always a competition sport of some kind. You know, you've got to, because you know you're not perfect, but you got to be better than most. So we want to be radical for Jesus. So we want to really give ourselves to it. And we're mostly doing that comparing to other people and tearing down other people who don't believe it quite like we do or don't act in the same way we do. If fear makes us selfish, love makes us generous. I think that's true.
Yeah.
And one of the things that I forget where I had this quote somewhere, but I don't know where it is. And I don't know where it came from. I don't know if this book or some other book, but it actually says the need for significance and the desire to leave a legacy is driven by the fear of death.
Ooh.
Because people seek an immortality on the planet. So I need to leave something here of a legacy or significance. And the despair people feel when they don't feel like they've reached that. They don't have that. And I've never thought about that because I had that need for significance thing. Oh my gosh, since I was a kid, I don't think I would ever attach it to the fear of death. But seeing it attached that way, the attempt to somehow be immortal in the world because you've left your name behind and it holds significance for people. And people quote Plato or Aristotle or C.S. Lewis long after they've passed away, or build monuments to them and, you know, whatever, political leaders, other kinds of leaders. It really shows that there is something about that fear of death. When we embrace our own mortality, that has very negative impact. And then when we find the freedom in Christ from that and love from that, I was diagnosed over a year ago with this multiple myeloma, which is a death sentence, but then humanity is a death sentence too. But because we're all dying of something someday, somehow, and some of us are going to get surprised and the airplane drops on your head while you're walking down the street or something. So it's not necessarily I get to live to a ripe old age. But I've really wrestled with this in the last year because I get asked, you know, how are you feeling about whether, you know, what's going on? And I was like, I don't think about it a lot. I don't, I'm not afraid of dying. I don't know that I ever have been. There's something about death to me that's exciting. That finally getting across the other side of this thing. Ben Sasse, a senator from Nebraska, I guess, is just diagnosed with pancreatic cancer at 53, which is, it says a death sentence. And he said, his brother said this, sure, you're on a clock, but we're all on a clock. Death is a wicked thief and pursues us all. And when I read that in the paper yesterday, I went, I don't know that I see death that way. I used to. It's not a thief. Yeah, if it takes someone young, you feel whatever the lack of that is for them, the lack of their presence in our life.
Yeah.
But as I read it, I was thinking, I've really come to see this very differently. I talked about being in the lobby of the theater, but when I read that, I was thinking, no, I really think that death may well be the caterpillar crawling up on the branch and forming the chrysalis, giving himself up, just in some sense dying. And funerals might be all the caterpillars getting together and say, oh, it's so sad. What happened to Jim over there? Crawled up on that branch and he died. When It's the stripping away of this temporal body. And who knows what we'll see, what we'll be free to experience without the limitations of the humanity we've known here and the brokenness of that humanity. So when I don't think about the death as a thief. I think about it as, oh my gosh, this is where the adventure really begins. And I may be crazy for that. Or I even thought, am I in denial about this disease I have or what I should be doing? I mean, I'm doing all the medical stuff they're giving me to do. Everything looks great numbers wise. This is a disease that can be managed for a certain amount of time until it jumps back in play. But that length of time can vary widely with different people. And so I'm really, even though I kind of know now what may provide the end of my life if there's not healing. And I had somebody last week just found out I had cancer and they were like, oh my gosh, I'm praying for healing. Great. I've been praying for that for a year. I will continue. That's great. But there's more than just praying for healing for me.
Yeah.
You want to walk with me through this? Do you want to talk? Is there something more than I'll pray for healing? And that's all I know to do. And for many of us, that's all we know to do. Because maybe we're afraid of that mortality ourselves and don't know how to talk about it. But when I think about looking at like a caterpillar crawling up into the, and what the caterpillar does is basically decomposes themselves. They actually are the chrysalis on the outside, and inside they come all gooey, and then they emerge as this incredible butterfly. And then this is what they were really born to be. And Paul talks it both in the sense of, he does this in 1 Corinthians 15. Death is the last great enemy yet to be destroyed. And so it is an enemy in the sense that we weren't made for that.
Yeah.
Then he also goes on to say, but whatever we are here is like a seed. And we don't know what we'll be after the resurrection, because that it's the same way a seed looks to a plant. The plant is so much more glorious than the seed. But everything in the plant is in the seed. It just hasn't emerged yet. And that's how I think of what death is. And to me, that's, if there's any fear of death in our hearts, it's because we really don't see what death is. We look at it only from this side of death instead of embracing it from the other side.
I got into an interesting conversation just this last week where I found myself hoping for, I wouldn't say hoping for death per se, but hoping for God's return, God's renewal of the world, because there's some relationships that there was some tension with. And honestly, I don't think there's going to be reconciliation on this earth. And it's heartbreaking to me because these are people who at one point in their life genuinely deeply cared for one another, had a great relationship with one another, but because of some of the deep wounding that's happened, there has been a pretty strong move away from relational connection or any kind of reconciliation, anything along those lines. And man, my heart just goes out because it's like, Lord, we need your renewal. We need your return. And I know that your heaven, your experience of heaven is going to be the restoration of those relationships, the healing of the wounds, the things that the enemy has done to shatter people's lives and to shatter relationship. You're going to bring anew. You're going to restore. You're going to bind up. You're going to restore. And he's doing that now. Like, it's not that that isn't available to us now, but man, I found myself really looking forward to when those boundaries, those restrictions are stripped away and genuinely able to experience the people that I love without the fear, without the trouble, without the wounds, without the pain, being able to really press into relationship with them without all the garbage that the enemy tries to heap on us.
Which he does do in amazing fashion.
That's
maybe where just love fits in, because almost everything about the world we live in seeks to separate us from each other.
Yeah.
And what God had desired from the beginning, if we hadn't obscured it with the word righteousness, if we'd left the word justice in there, what we would have seen is God's desire is that we really come together as people. If I treat you like I want to be treated and you treat me like you want to be treated, then we'll have a community together that's effective and real, and that love gets to win our hearts to each other and reconciliation happens. I've had both in this world. I've had long time relationships that shattered for decades. Some of those have healed. And it's just, it's amazingly glorious. You feel like you've wasted 20 years over something that didn't need to separate us, but it did. And then when it reconnects again, it's just one of the most glorious things about being on the planet.
Yeah.
And it makes those, like you talk about, those that persist in being broken, particularly if it's people that we care about on two sides of the divide, and you really care about both of them, can't you guys get together and get past this? And I have found, interestingly, very few people who know about the divisions I've had with people who I feel like have mistreated me in one way or another, how people inside those who have relationships on both sides of it, how little impetus there is to say, why don't we get together, you two and me, and let's talk about this. Let's find healing from God. I don't know that anyone has ever offered that. Because people are, afraid to get involved, afraid to, It's sad to me when we've been gifted with the ministry of reconciliation.
Yeah, and I agree with you. I think that's the beauty of it is that when we get to experience it here on earth, on this, in this season, this time, it's so beautiful and it's so encouraging to my heart. I can't fathom what it's going to look like when we are living in unrestricted kingdom. That to me, gosh, that sounds like heaven, to be able to be in that space where we're able to move towards one another without the petty things, without the wounds, without the old things that bind up our heart in a way to where we can't live freely in the world, where we can't fully express unrestricted love for one another. I mean, and I think about that even in my own relationships and with the way that I parent and my girls. And it's like, I'm doing the best that I can, Lord, and I'm trying to pursue your heart. I'm trying to be a catalyst of that, but I know I make major mistakes. And so to be able to be able to live in that freely with the people that I love, man, that's so exciting to me. That is a hope set before me that I can really get on board with.
Yeah. Can you imagine if both sides of some kind of paralyzing dispute or broken relationship suddenly both see the circumstance for what it was?
Yeah.
And it's not a matter of, well, I'm going to do all the forgiving, obviously, because I've been really hurt, but actually see my part in how things broke down with other people.
Yeah.
And be able to own it without shame, because there's shame in it. But I hope, I've said this before in this podcast, I hope there's a significant time of eternity where relationships get to really heal. I hope it just all show up and wave, hey, bygones be bygones, everything's great. Because when I've been part of those healing things, they're so miraculous and so joyful to watch a relationship that was shattered mostly by lies. Almost all relationships are shattered by lies. Who's ever telling them or fighting them, or somebody needs something out of somebody, so they're not being honest about it. When the lies are seen for what they are, and then you get to own your stuff. And when you own your stuff and look at someone in the eye and say, man, I'm really sorry. That's not how I saw it at the time. And the other person says, ah, that's great. It's amazing to me how even years of hurt and pain dissolve in a moment of genuine, honest reconciliation. It really does.
Yes.
It just dissolves and the friendship comes back online, and doesn't necessarily mean you trust the person again. If you've been in a business arrangement that got gypped over, you might not want to go back into business with them, but the friendship can take off again.
Yeah.
And the caring for each other. And that part I look forward to as well. I look forward to that with some people who are already in eternity. I can't wait to see what that's going to look like. But I hope it's more than just, hey, how you doing? All's great, man. Yeah, we screwed up back there, but let's just get on with it. I think real deep healing, because God seems to be aware of that. And to me, what Just Love does, it puts back in play how much God cared, not about me being righteous and holy alongside him. It was about me loving his kids. There's no greater joy in my life in a temporal sense than watching my kids enjoy each other. Yeah. Watching them, my daughter and son have not had any kind of enduring fight. They genuinely get in a room, and Julie's husband with Andy and Andy's wife with them. It's just all fun. It's laughter and joy, and they go do things together. And man, there's nothing that brings contentment. And I know people who've been really estranged from their kids or estranged in marriage, like Sarah and I were for a few weeks.
Yeah.
There's nothing more painful than when those close relationships can't find a way to wholeness, and they become a constant source of heartache and pain.
Yeah. And to be able to, that's why I love the idea of it being void of shame, because I think that's where, again, we move back into that space where we're self-protecting, is because it's like, well, no, I've got to take care of myself because I don't know who I am. I don't know my identity. But to be able to know who you are, to be able to see clearly in the mirror without any restriction, and to be able to move towards people that we have harmed, that we have done injustice to, and to be able to own that, that is, it's not just freeing for the person that we've wronged. I know for me, in the times that I have owned my stuff, genuinely seen it, and moved towards reconciliation by owning my things, how incredibly freeing it is, humbling, but freeing it is to my own heart as well, because that's, there's some kind of incredible deep work that God does when I own those things and say, man, I am sorry. Like I am still in process. Here's my mess. And I am very incredibly sorry for the way that my brokenness has impacted your life in a negative way.
Yeah. And that's powerful too. Like I said, the freedom comes on both sides of that. Because shame is a fear-based thing, right? I mean, yes. I feel shame is I'm afraid how people are going to perceive me, judge me, look at me. And so it's more of the same thing. It's that fear. And once that fear, whether it's in the form of selfishness or shame or just terror, causes us to be less the people God's made us to be. And I love that back in the Hebrews day, he's calling that out as this is what, there's a slavery to fear that Jesus came to set us free from. So we wouldn't need to be afraid of him. We wouldn't need to be afraid of each other. We wouldn't have to be afraid of the uncertainty of life. We wouldn't have to be afraid of eternity. And yet how much of Christianity has put the fear of eternity into people's souls as the cause for which to manipulate their behavior. And so instead of liberating people from fear, which is when you can really live free,
yes,
we've doubled down on fear. And I think that produces that Pharisee kind of religion, look down my nose at you, you're not working hard enough. I think one of the things it said in this book, I left that part of the quote out, but it talked about people who have that struggle with what's happening in the earth politically, environmentally, they don't have any hope the earth will survive. They begin to look forward to death. That's what they were saying. For whatever reason, you no longer fear death. They look forward to it because that they finally get out of this mess. That's when they become more benevolent, generous, kind people in the earth. So the social scientist is saying, whatever takes care of that fear, if it's your faith, great. If it's your hopelessness about the world, you'll still be a better person when you're no longer afraid of dying and you don't have to protect stuff. I find that fascinating.
Do you think it has the same, I guess, joy or fulfillment? Like if we have resolved ourselves to our mortality, or basically like, well, it's inevitable, so I'm just gonna live my life type thing, versus I have known and I have encountered and I have been made new by this limitless love of God, and I'm still in process, but when I'm done with this, when my temporary body dies, then even more so, I get to live in the fullness of who God created me to be. I get to live in the fullness of that love-based identity versus the fear-based identity that the enemy has tried to sow. Because that's, I think about like the despair piece of it, or the resignation to mortality. And there isn't the there isn't the rest, to me anyway, there isn't the freedom in that. There isn't the joy that's in that. It's more of like a, okay, I'm going to resolve to this. I'm just going to resign myself to this because it's inevitable versus I know that I'm loved either way. It doesn't matter whether I live or die because my life is Christ and for me to die is gain. So either way, I get to live in this kingdom love and that's what's authoring the way that I move in the world.
Yeah, I love that. I hope that's what people are thinking. I hope people aren't thinking, well, I can't wait to die so I can get into the love of God finally. I hope this thing, I mean, Jesus kind of came to give you life and give it to you in abundance.
Yeah.
We haven't learned how to live in that life. For the most part, people who, someone said this to me in an email this week, I thought it was brilliant. People who describe the Christian life for us and tell us how to live it are people who are still looking through that veil of Moses that's trying to find a performance-based, accountability-based, shame-based way to motivate people to good behavior. So we've never learned where life is. What Jesus talked about is when life happens inside you, when you reconnect with God's love and thus God's life. And that fullness in you now frees you to live out of love in the world because I don't have to take what isn't mine.
Yeah.
And yet so much of the way we do stuff in our world is we're always trying to take what hasn't been given to me. Mm-hmm. And boy, the temptation in the garden was grabbing for ourselves that which God has not given us, which I love that statement. It's an old statement from Dave Coleman as the definition of sin, grabbing for myself what God hasn't given to me. Mm-hmm. But learning to be content inside what God has given you, and we've talked about this before, where contentment lies, that's the best way to move forward in your journey.
Yeah.
It's not where fear is. It's not where I'm being left out. I got to work harder. It's where I'm contented with presence. And then live out of fullness. And then whatever else God wants to still give me, he can give me. But I find that out of contentment and fullness rather than trying to find it out of desperation and fear of missing out. FOMO, as they say.
Yeah, I think that's the piece is when we're living in this space of deep rest and the knowing of who we are to the Almighty God, then it opens up so many opportunities. It opens up so many possibilities. And that's even, I mean, just looking at your journey and just navigating your mortality over this last year, as you've been diagnosed with cancer and looking through that and trying to figure out what that's going to look like. Even in that, it's like, but I know that I'm his. I know that I'm loved by him. I know that I'm in relationship with him. And even though these circumstances aren't comfortable and aren't easy, that doesn't negate my identity. It doesn't negate the value that I hold in his eyes. And I think that's where a lot of the fear comes in. At least I know for me, that's where the enemy has the ability to draw me back into fear is when I'm not in alignment with that love-based identity, when I'm not navigating life or viewing the challenges that I'm facing through that perception of, no, I am loved and completely accepted and healed and restored by him. Now, that's still in process in this lifetime.
Sure.
But
if he's present with me through that process, I can be at rest in it.
Yes.
And yet so many of us, I read this yesterday in Christianity Day magazine. This author is saying, consider the opening of Bethel Music's 2019 hit, Goodness of God. Says, I love you, Lord. Oh, your mercy never fails me. All my days I've been held in your hands. That's a quote. They said, everything in these 19 words is outrageous. An all-powerful God who knows and cares for each person as an individual, who attends to every detail of our lives, and not only loves us, but also opens the way for puny mortals to love him back. Sure, this is preschool level of Christian theology. It's dismissed. We don't have a God that intimate. We don't have a God who cares about each of us in a way that we can connect and then begin to experience his fullness, when that's exactly the gospel Jesus brought to us. And yet we've got people, again, looking through the veil of their own performance stuff, who belittle the idea that God can make his love known in each of us and walk with us through the circumstances in our life. Now, I get the other side of that where, you know, people who think God's the fairy godmother and he's going to, you know, fix whatever it is that I have a problem with in my life and the disillusionment of that. That's not the God we have.
No.
But we have a loving God who connects with us. And in our most desperate pains and circumstances and hurts and broken relationships, there's a presence, an effective and an affection presence that we can lean into that provides the fullness that we get to live out of. Yeah. And if we've missed that, and because people teach against it, when I read that in Christianity Today, and know so many other people look at that and go, okay, that's outrageous. Those 19 words that God cares and lives in you and knows you, that's just outrageous. God's not like that. Going, oh my gosh, yes, he is. Yeah. Far be it for me to defend music from Bethel, but I'm telling you, boy, to dismiss that. And I understand that's often not understood well and not lived well. So it looks like a little panacea to some people that's not effective. But when you live in the reality of those words, Christ in you, the hope of glory, God writing his law in our hearts, that's how he meant to do this, to live in the world without the law, but not lawless, because we live by the law of love. And that's what shapes us in a way from the inside out, that you can't, when you love someone, you can't help treat them lovingly. You can't help it.
Yeah.
It's not like, okay, I got to love them. Jesus told me I got to love them, so I'm going to try to love them. No, once it fills your heart, once you know how loved you are by God, now you get to share that with other people. You get to impart it just by the way you love them, not by preaching at them.
Yeah. Yeah, by being with them and sharing in the mutual experience of his presence.
As a compassionate, present person, not someone manipulating to an outcome, not somebody trying to get them saved or get them whatever, just being present as a human being, caring about another human being. And that's what the world would begin to change by. But if we live out of that fear, if we keep letting fear drive us, then we're going to keep seeing what we're seeing in the world. We're going to keep seeing greater animosity and greater fear and greater, I've got to protect my tribe against your tribe. And oh my gosh, it's so exhausting.
It is exhausting. And I guess the intriguing challenge that I have with it is, why did the institution of Christianity go there? Like, if we're supposedly following the author of genuine life and love, why did the institution of Christianity go there? Other than control and manipulation,
it's probably fear again.
Yeah. Yeah.
Fear that people go astray, fear that we can't keep them on straight and narrow, fear the doctrine's not right, fear, fear, fear. And so we create a whole culture out of fear that rewards a few and torments the many.
Yeah.
And think we've done the work of Christ in the world. Instead of stepping back and going, you know what? He talked about loving each other, love as I've loved you, do unto others as you would want them to do to you. Yeah. That's a whole different way of living that somehow, because our Christianity was more about personal righteousness and piety, we lost what it meant to be loved and to love. And that's where life is.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.